Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is Thursday, December 28th. We've got 3 days left between now and 2017. We've got a bunch to do. Get going. I appreciate you tuning in this morning, and I appreciate you supporting Faith Radio. It's been a great year at Faith Radio, and there are so many generous people out there, and God has obviously moved in your life to support us, and thank you that you have answered that call and supported Faith Radio. It makes a huge difference as we continue to try to spread the gospel to as many places as we can. And we had a couple of opportunities to get stations going in other places like Bismarck. And so we had a great opportunity this year, and we were able to do it because of your support. And if you are a new listener to Faith Radio, and maybe you've just seen our billboards in Hartford or Bismarck, and you thought, I'm going to give this station a chance. Welcome. Nice to have you here. If you want to go to myfaithradio.com, get a welcome packet. We'll send you some cool information about the station and what we do here. And thanks for tuning in. So I just see that Tim Cook, the Apple's chief executive, was paid $102 million this year. So he will not be filing the short form, which is such a convenience for me. But way to go, Apple. Now, I think they're struggling a little bit because they thought the big iPhone 10 was going to be a gigantic hit. I'm not sure it is at $1,000 a pop. I don't know. I actually have not seen anyone. None of my friends have them. So that's always a sign that maybe, I don't know what that is, a sign of what, but I haven't seen one yet. I've not physically held one outside of being in the store and seeing it from a distance behind the case, the glass, where you don't get to touch them. Anyway. We've got Dr. Peter Kapsner on the studio line, so we'll chat with him and catch up, see how his Christmas went, and have some of our usual banter. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. That music belongs to Dr. Peter Kapsner, my regular guest on Thursday. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Bill.
Yeah, I was just looking at the news that Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, will get paid $102 million. I suppose that's about right if you've got a company worth $1 trillion. I'm not sure that the demand for the iPhone's at $1,000 a pop. Your kids asking for a $1,000 telephone?
Well, you know, if they did, I think they'd be asking in vain at this point. They usually get the hand-me-down models, and I think I am rolling, I'm not even sure what number I have right now. It might be 6 or 7 or 8, but I don't even know the difference between them. But $1,000 a pop for one of those. Like you said, I don't know. I haven't seen any of my friends with the iPhone 10, and it certainly wasn't under my Christmas tree this year either.
Yeah, but I think that we use that word too loosely nowadays. The smartphones, their smart water, their smart cars, their smart chicken. I always think if the chicken is so smart, why is it behind cellophane and I'm holding it in the grocery store?
That's actually a really good point. You know, we have 8 chickens out here where we live too, and I can verify even when they're alive that as much as I love them, they, you know, I'm not sure their IQ hits double digits.
And smart water, it's like, really? You know, probably grew up drinking out of the hose in the backyard, which might explain a lot, hair loss, that kind of stuff. But
yeah, there may be a correlation between the water we drink and how intelligent we are. And so I'm with you. I drank just directly out of that hose, and who knows what's in my system still to this day because of it.
Completely. Now, the kids today, they always have to have those power sports drinks and, you know, these neon colored sports drinks like that. That blue drink, what flavor is that? Windex?
Yeah, I know. Well, I think they claim it's a raspberry or something, but
okay. Blueberry,
I'm
maybe?
Not a raspberry. Yeah,
Yeah.
you know, it's something along those lines. And like you said, I'm not sure if that color is not part of my crayon box. I don't know where it comes from relative to what fruit is being claimed on the outside of the package.
Right. Now, Peter, as we're probably up drinking coffee and getting our day started, like most people, I was being reminded of 20 years ago, butter and caffeine and fats were all bad for you. Now we get up in the morning and we're supposed to put organic grass-fed butter and oil in our coffee and drink it. And that's the healthy way to start the day. It's so funny how trends and things change over time. What are you believing today that you think is going to be debunked 20 years from now? I mean, it's so weird to think that 20 years ago, we were supposed to be avoiding these things. Now, two decades later, we're supposed to be putting them in our coffee. And I think it's called, what's that coffee called? Bullet coffee or something. Power coffee.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, I think about that a lot, actually, Bill. Is how am I seeing the world right now, where I think I'm just so much more enlightened today than I was 20 years ago. And yet, give it another 20 years when I'm going to look back and think about how dumb I was for the things
totally.
That I was doing. And, you know, and I think back to my grandmother. She was a Central Minnesotan German, and it was a farmhouse. And they ate as much butter and as much fat and all of that as they possibly could. And she lived well into her 80s, and my grandfather well into his 90s. And I know that's not a formula for that, but I don't think it's as simple as what we make it out to be. And I often think it's almost comical to me that one day Harvard might come out with a study and that'll say, don't ever eat an egg again for as long as you live.
Right.
And then Princeton will come out the next day and will say, you know, you really should have an egg a day. The protein is really important. And you just wonder what's going on with all the science of this and you know, even the quality of our facts, I think, so often we can question when it comes from some of that kind of research.
Mm-hmm. You know, Peter, I talk to you every week, and I'm still not certain of your job description at the university. Explain to our listeners again what you teach.
Yeah, it's probably because I'm not certain about it either. So at least
I know. That's so.
I've been teaching both at Northwestern and at Bethel, and my primary field is practical theology. So it's that idea of studying both the history of how people have thought about our faith and thought about it, you know, across the course of the biblical text. But then most importantly is what is culture like today, and how does that history of our theology and how does the theology of our biblical text, how does that inform the way we think about things today? So I teach classes that are really in the stream of where culture is and what culture is thinking about, and it very much keeps me on my toes, Bill. I feel like I'm always one step behind trying to catch up.
Well, you are. So, and you also teach a sexuality class, don't you?
I do, and that's one of those. That's a good example of a class that fits into that stream. And, you know, first of all, it's a class that I think I have a pretty good job security on. No one seems to want to touch that subject. But it's been really a delightful process to be in that class for the last 6 years. I taught a gender class prior to that was slightly along the same vein anyway, but it was different in the sense that it focused on gender relationships with a dimension of sexuality. And this course that I teach now, we spend 14 weeks talking about different dimensions of human sexuality, hour and a half a pop, twice a week with the students. And I can't believe how the questions have shifted and changed over those 6 years and what the students have sort of forced me to research and think about. It's really been quite a process.
Yeah, and I'm sure you hate that because that's homework for you. But what are some of the top issues of 2017?
Yeah, it's, you know, we've talked about it a few times in different ways, but the big ones, it's interesting that the questions change and almost just go into the background, whereas in 2010, most of the questions were around, could you live together before you got married? And then it switched really quickly into same gender relationships. And now it is the transgenderism and gender dysphoria and that topic. And I think that the troubling thing about that is it doesn't feel like we ever get caught up and have a good systematic way to think about some of the past questions before the new questions come.
Mm-hmm.
And so the old questions get buried and they're not really addressed. And then we're on to something new and new ways of thinking about things. And it even goes back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, is we think we're becoming more enlightened in these areas. But it's very troubling to see some of the effects of the questions and the anxiety and the turmoil among the students.
Mm-hmm. Peter, when we as parents, they're trying so hard to raise their kids to make wise, godly decisions. Do you have ever an opportunity in your class to hear from your students about some of the regrets that they have from their past? And are they vulnerable enough to say, gosh, professor, this is a piece of my past that I deeply regret? Are they already at that stage where they're dealing with regrets and depressions from bad choices that you know of, or are they keeping that to themselves?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bill, and it's one of the great privileges of being in that class, actually, and especially having been in pastoral ministry prior to my life as a professor, is I care far more about the students than I do actually about the content, and the content is very important. It has to be good content, but they do crack open, and usually it's one or two students a term will come up and want to have coffee, but I really see them crack open in the papers that they write, where we're talking about every issue that you can imagine relative to their past and how they were brought up and choices that they've made, and they have an opportunity to, if they want to, I don't force them to at all, but just they can reflect generally or specifically about their past, and hopefully the classroom is a safe enough environment that they can do that, and term after term, I do watch them begin to crack open with regrets as you described, and mm-hmm. they're just looking for some kind of hope and some sort of future, and their past doesn't have to fully define them, and how do they move forward into it? And I see it paper after paper after paper.
Well, Peter, let me take a little break. When we come back, more with Dr. Peter Kapsner. It's 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. 19 minutes after the hour, Dr. Peter Kapsner is with me on the studio line. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
You're back. Nice to hear your voice, nice and crisp and clear.
So, I have a better connection now. I might need to get that iPhone 10 after all.
I'm gonna start a GoFundMe page so we can get you an iPhone 10 because that was a little
I appreciate that.
A little bassy and a little cloudy. But anyway, nice to have you back. And so with the presents this year around the Christmas time, I mean, we've gotten so nervous with the sexual harassment cases. I know that's got to be a topic of conversation with kids in your class and the appropriateness and the new rules that are going into place where you can hug a person, but then you immediately need to draw away so you're not having any contact whatsoever. There are so many things that make people so nervous. I mean, even the Tickle Me Elmo doll now came with instructions where you have to ask for permission before tickling it.
Did it really?
I just made that up.
I can't possibly be.
I just made it up.
Here's the thing: is that I wouldn't be surprised these days because it's funny, Bill. I mean, you can kind of feel it in the air, can't you? Just in conversations and in relationships, and even around the holidays, you kind of. It's sort of this tension that's there that everybody's asking questions about, well, what is this and do I do this and can I say this? And so it wouldn't surprise me if Elmo was part of the deal in this whole thing.
Yeah. So are you encouraged with the way kids are standing up for their faith?
You know, it's interesting. I think we talked about that in class. Another class that I teach is a Christianity and culture class, and they were talking often about the idea as how do we share our faith in today's society? And it's people are not terribly comfortable, I think, in the next generation, just being really out there with their faith. They want to have a lived faith that matters and demonstrates. And it takes me back. The original term for witness in the New Testament, when they talk about bearing witness or being a witness to the ends of the earth, is really having a life that testifies to the worth and effect of following Jesus. And it was far more than just telling a story and trying to find an opening where you can share your faith. It was living out your faith in a way that was obvious for people to see that there is something different about you. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something in the next generation that they're really attending to far more so than we've got to come up with a technique so that we can share a story with somebody as soon as we get the first opportunity. And Not that that's all, that was not all bad. It's just a very different way of looking at it. But I think in many ways is more consistent with the biblical text.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Bible says faith comes from hearing and hearing from the word of God. So we do need to be sharing words that come right from God's word. I remember being at a men's seminar years and years ago. There was about 400 men in the room. And the facilitator said, you know, how many of you came to personal faith in Christ because of something you heard in a church service? And, you know, a few hands went up. And then the next question was, how many of you came to faith in Christ because of someone sat down with you one-on-one and shared the good news? And every hand went up. So, again, we have that blessed duty of going out and sharing our hope with others and trying to get one-on-one. That's how people get saved, is through investing in people's lives. I mean, it's great that things like Chick-fil-A, you know, when the Atlanta airport shuts down, they race over and feed everybody. That's an act of kindness and love. And it says to the world, hey, we care, but we still have to, I believe, sit down and not be ashamed of the gospel. Romans 1:16, I am not ashamed of the gospel.
It's so true. It's so well said, Bill. It's that both and, I think, is what we're talking about here, where I think some people grew up with a lot of words, but it was relatively empty when it came to actions or behaviors. And I think I hear some young people maybe saying things that they were turned off by the church because they felt it was hypocritical and it was all words and no action. But if you can get, as you said, one-to-one with people who really are living out this life of faith, and they can begin to talk about and describe, so here's the deal and here's why, and Jesus really is worth following, and begin to express that hope. It's kind of that both and of the relationship and the action all coming together. And I think that there's a real power when those words and deeds are all interwoven, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Peter, do you think that in most every culture and religion, they believe that we should not do to others what we would not want done to us?
You know, it sure seems that way, Bill. It's interesting. I went and toured the Hindu temple with one of my classes up in Maple Grove last term. I had some students that wanted to do that, and we had the opportunity to do that. And that was very much the message, but it was coming from a place of karma oriented and try to do good things the very best that you can. And we had to process that as a class. What was different about that faith versus the faith of our Christian belief, and why would somebody want to be a Christian? And a lot of what we processed is we walked from sort of shrine to shrine. They had 21 shrines within the temple to the various Hindu gods. And, you know, I don't know if it was just me, Bill, but it felt really dead and empty. And it felt that there was almost a sadness around all of it in trying to live out this life relative to karma, as opposed mm-hmm. to the idea that I have a power, an actual living power of the Spirit working within me because of what Jesus did in the cross and the empty tomb. And that empowers me and enables me to truly live and shine in a different kind of way that some of the other faiths, for some of the claims that are made, it just doesn't seem to have that living dimension to it.
And how did the students walk away, Peter, from that experience?
Well, I think just, you know, I think a mix, you know, confusion and mm-hmm. appreciative and recognition of some of the differences. I think we try to create sound bites out of our different faith experiences and try to make them all the same. Well, it's just the same, it's just the same. But if you actually really begin to dive into the different religious movements, you see substantial and very significant differences. But in America these days, where we just want everybody sort of sometimes to think the same way and act the same way, then we do that with our religion too a lot of times, where everything just needs to be the same, as opposed to seeing that there's real differences, and we really need to attend to those differences and how to think about them.
Mm-hmm. I would want to leave that Hindu temple and get Hebrews 4:12 tattooed to my forehead. And then, believe me, there's plenty of room to get all this in there. For the word of God is alive and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart.
That would be a perfect verse relative to what we're talking about. There's just such a life. And I was actually really appreciative of myself. And the people were lovely, and it was very nice, and they were very gracious. But I did walk away, and that was the most significant contrast, is there's something very alive and active in me and in my life, so that though hardly perfect am I, there's a life and a relationship with Jesus that I have that is real and significant. And there's something about that that just, it really does shine in a different kind of way. It felt empty and hollow, as nice as people were.
Yeah. Well, Peter, thank you so much for being a regular guest on the show in this year. And I look forward to continuing our conversations next year. So I will talk to you next year.
Sounds good. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Bill.
Yep. Happy New Year to you. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with Breakpoint in just a minute. Thank you, John Stone Street and Breakpoint. I always love your perspective. It is 32 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break. And then when we come back after the news at 20 minutes to, we're going to speak to Mark Galley, editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. Editor-in-chief. I go right to the top. Be back in a minute.
They start to realize these other worldviews are counterfeits. They answer a few of life's big questions, but they obscure the most important big life questions like, am I loved? Why do I hurt? Is there any meaning to my life? Is there any hope for the world? So students come away with a strong vision, not only of a Christian worldview, but how they personally could live it out in a way that really has an influence on all of society.
If you want to hear that interview from Dr. Jeff Myers, head over to myfaithradio.com and type in Dr. Jeff Myers Summit Ministries. Up next, Mark Galley. I got to be super nice to my friends and guests that live in California. So because he's in California, I can't make him get up at 5 a.m. to talk to me. So I thought, well, I had an interview with him last week just to say, what are the top highlights of 2017? From Christianity Today. We're going to hear that next from Mark Galley, editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. Be back in a minute.
As you're flipping the calendar, it's the perfect time to think through your goals and desires for your family. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. What do you want to change in your family in the coming year? Do you need to rearrange your schedule in order to have weekly one-on-one time with your teen? Or maybe it's time to get some outside help for your family. Take a moment today to think through the tangible, positive steps that you can take in the coming year. Then sit down with your kids and ask them what changes they'd like to make in the family dynamic. You might be surprised by their response. Here's your chance. Be intentional. Get a fresh start.
Navigating a child's teen years is one of the biggest challenges that parents will face, which is why Mark Gregston has developed a new free online parenting course called Tough Guys and Drama Queens. Get started now at freeparentingcourse.com.
Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with us this morning. As always, I always have the very most interesting guests. As we're looking at the year in review of 2017, hard to believe, we're kind of nearing the end of that. I thought there's a person I want to talk to, Mark Galley. He's the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. So let's go right to the top and get a CT is such a great go-to publication. I love it. And I thought if we can get him, let's talk to Mark. And he's on our studio line. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So busy year for evangelicals, huh?
It's been a crazy year for evangelicals.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start with some of the craziest, and that would be evangelical support for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, I don't know exactly, you know, what you're looking for here, but that has been a point of deep contention on all sorts of levels.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm interested in hearing your take on how evangelicals have supported him, retreated from him. And where they're at today.
Yeah. Well, one thing to keep in perspective is that their support for him, or that is to say a candidate with conservative/Republican policies, the one thing people don't seem to recognize is it's not that unusual for evangelicals to vote in such large numbers for a politically conservative candidate. In fact, they voted in larger numbers for previous Republican candidates in previous elections. So that part of it's not surprising. I think what's surprising for everyone is that given Trump's blustering his clear ethical problems as an individual human being. He doesn't model character by any stretch of the imagination, which has been an important thing for evangelicals in other times. So the anomaly is not that they're supporting him for his policies, but they're supporting him despite his character flaws.
Mm-hmm.
That's troubling a lot of people.
Yeah, even though.
On the other hand, when I talk to evangelicals who have actually voted for Trump, most of them agree that it's a big tension in their lives. They're not particularly enthused about Trump's character or his twittering or the way he just cannot seem to keep himself under control. They just happen to think the policies he wants to support are better than the policies that his liberal counterparts want to support, and so they're willing to hold their nose. They basically, as one of my colleagues who voted for Trump said, yeah, a lot of us just held our nose and were kind of sick when we were voting, but we felt still, given the choices, that's what we had to do.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what do you think about President Trump's evangelical leadership support? I mean, a lot of pastors and leaders from the Christian community have thrown in a fair amount of support for him, haven't they?
Yeah, right. I do think, it runs the gamut. There are some among his leadership, his evangelical leadership group, who seem to have been completely succumbed to being close to power. They are what's called sycophants. That's to say, they just will say anything nice about Trump publicly in order to be close to power and to have the power. That seems to be pretty clear in some cases. I wouldn't make a sweeping judgment about that about everyone, because I know people who are on that council who deeply disagree with him, both in terms of his character and some of his policies. But they're there because they want to try to influence him to be near the center of power so they can influence him in a direction they think is better for the nation. I'm thinking especially of a couple of individuals who are very concerned about immigration issues.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't make a sweeping judgment about why people are doing that, because every individual has his own kind of agenda, what he's about.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line, of course, is it does give the impression that evangelicals are just so solidly behind him they're just really super solidly behind him. And that's true and not true. It's true in terms of his policies for the most part, but there's a significant disagreement even among people on that panel. So
Mark,
more balanced, nuanced understanding of it would help us.
Yeah. Are we starting to change the way we even look at the word evangelical? I know there's some people that are more reluctant now to use the word, especially as it applies to race. I think there's a lot of African-Americans that think evangelical is a term for white people.
Well, they not only think it's a term for white people, it's a term for white conservative Republican people.
Okay.
So, yeah, the word is... it's very problematic right now. Unfortunately, what we're doing is we're allowing the secular media to define the word for us. So when a secular pollster is interested in some aspect of American life, 99% of the time, the pollster is interested in issues that are political in nature, what their people's view of immigration is, what people's view of nuclear arms is, what the people's view of this aspect of the economy or that. And so they will poll even a number of people, one of those groups being evangelicals, and in order for them to separate out statistics, they tend to separate out white evangelicals because it's fairly easy to do that. And they end up asking all these political questions. Well, evangelicals, especially white evangelicals, certainly white evangelicals, they're Americans. So they believe in democracy, and so they have political opinions. But when poll after poll after poll comes out asking them their political opinion, it gives the impression to the rest of the country that evangelicals are fundamentally conservative Republicans who happen to just have a religious veneer to their lives.
Interesting.
Actually, most evangelicals are people like you and me. They wake up, They have to have a cup of coffee to get started.
Indeed.
Got to get the kids dressed and off to school. They got to get to work. That evening, they got a Christian education meeting. Then they might have to go to Boy Scouts. Then they have to, you know, and they're just trying to get through their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to worship on Sundays. And usually the service has nothing to do with politics whatsoever. And then on Tuesday, somebody phones them and asks them what their view of the environment is. And they tell them.
Yeah.
And then they go back. Then they go pick up their kids at school.
Yeah, and then watch the game.
So it makes it, you know, the polls make it sound like they're this rabid political group instead of a group of people who are, yeah, they're politically conservative. But that isn't really who they are at their core. And that's a very unfortunate public relations issue right now for us, because it does make people who identify with that word in terms of its theological and spiritual value, and they just begin to think, well, I have nothing to do with these people. But actually, if you go to their homes and have dinner with them and go to church with them, you might disagree with them politically, but you'd have a great deal in common with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big problem right now. I don't know how we're going to get through that.
Yeah. Mark, you wrote in the Galley Report about evangelical Christians are sick. Do talk about that. And what do you mean by that?
Well, that is that was a title given to one of my articles by one of my colleagues.
Isn't that funny how that works?
You write
an article and they put a title on it.
Basically, I'm at the position now where I write stuff and other people edit it and publish it.
That's crazy.
Even though I'm the editor-in-chief. No, but I think he's fundamentally right in calling it that, and that is basically, the better phrase might be sin sick. That is, the evangelicals are one group of Christians in particular who are most sensitive to the fact that the heart of human beings is desperately wicked.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of that essay is to say, well, it's a part of a series that I'm writing called Evangelical Essentials for the 21st Century, and one of those essentials is that we as a group, more so than many other Christian groups, have a deep sensitivity about what's wrong with the human condition. And we not only think that intellectually, we feel it often.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something deeply wrong. We feel a sense of guilt. We feel a sense of shame, not only for ourselves but for others. And we know we are in desperately need of a Savior. And we see Jesus Christ being that Savior. So that's what I mean by evangelicals are sick. They are sick, like one is sick when one sees one's bank account completely dry up because the stock market dropped, or one is sick because one sees one marriage falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're sick because we see the world falling apart and we see our souls falling apart, and we're desperate for salvation in Jesus Christ.
Well said. Mark, let me take a little break. I'm speaking to Mark Galley. He's editor-in-chief at Christianity Today. When we return, we'll continue our conversation. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking to Mark Galley. He is the editor-in-chief of Christianity at Christianity Today, and he also writes the feature of the Galley Report. And we're kind of looking at 2017 in review. And Mark, this has been a huge year for religious freedom issues. Let's talk about what's going on at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so obviously there's this huge tension between the rights of evangelical Christians to practice their faith in the public square and the gay and lesbian community, who feel they have certain rights that should be honored and recognized. And right now it seems to be people are talking about it mostly in an either or capacity. Either the gay community gets to ask any business to do anything they feel they want to have done, even if it would violate the conscience of the business owner. And the business owner says, I have the right to refuse any service because of my religious or philosophical conscience. And it just seems to me that the conversation, like many conversations in America, has gotten a little too extremist. And I really do think there's a middle way in here. And the way I think about it is, if I was living in a town in which there was a baker who was Muslim, and I said, I'm going to have a wedding or a birthday party, and I want to put a crucifix on that cake. I want you to put it on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would do that. I would recognize if he said, look, that offends me. I can't do that. I'd say, oh, okay. Well, why don't you bake the cake, and I'll put the cross on later myself.
Mm-hmm.
We'd work something out.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would respect his religious faith, he would respect mine, and it just seems like this isn't that, it doesn't strike me as that hard of a problem to solve if we're willing to actually give each other some space to practice our lives the way we feel called to practice them. And I don't know if the Supreme Court's going to be able to make a decision given our legal system that allows for that sort of thing, but it doesn't seem like this is an insoluble problem. We're in such a extremist, volatile situation in the country that it's very hard for people to think of middle compromises that could help us move forward.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what would you consider maybe one of the most troubling issues that you've seen in 2017?
The thing I'm most concerned about is the blustering conversation going on between Trump and Korea. I am a student of history, and I saw how other wars in which we've gotten involved and got started, and they often started in this way, with one small threat followed by another small response threat, followed by a little bigger response threat, followed by another bigger response threat.
Yeah.
And I just am a little concerned that we are going to end up in either a conventional war with Korea or maybe something worse. And if it is something worse, if it ends up with some sort of nuclear exchange, of course, that's going to be absolutely devastating to not only America, but to Korea, to Christians, to non-Christians. It would just be horrible. So the optimistic side of me says these are two leaders who just like to bluster, and that's all we're going to do. But all of us have read enough history to know that sometimes people at the head of governments do things that are really stupid because of their pride.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, that's
my biggest fear right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how the food fight started my sophomore year.
Exactly.
You said what?
Exactly.
And it starts with a little flick of cake at somebody, and then all of a sudden it's just an all-out war.
Exactly.
And that's not going to go well for North Korea if there is a war.
No. Yeah.
So what might be the thing in 2017 you were most encouraged by?
I'm beginning to see, in spite of the divisiveness in our country, I'm beginning to see in more and more people who are trying to reach across ideological offenses to try to understand one another. I've mm-hmm. read a number of books this year that have done a tremendous job at trying to help me understand, and anyone who reads the book, understand people who have been supportive of Trump's policies and why they have been supportive of it. So probably the more famous book is Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance that helped us understand Appalachian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Another book I've read called White Working Class. Another book called The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, which tries to understand the moral foundations from which people of different views actually act. He's trying to dispute the idea that if you don't agree with me, you're probably either stupid or immoral, which is what both Republicans and Democrats think of one another. So these books are basically the division is worse than ever right now in our country,
mm-hmm.
and the division even in evangelicalism is worse than ever. But there are a number of people who are writing very thoughtful things, helping us to try to understand one another and try to talk to one another again.
Mm-hmm.
That I think will bear fruit in the coming years.
Yeah. Do you see us as being a body of believers that are being known by their love?
No, not right now.
Okay.
But I would also say it's not only not by our love. So there are some people who criticize religious conservatives for their seemingly anti-immigrant and sometimes racist statements, which are true. I mean, those things happen. But there's also animosity between evangelicals that don't display love,
mm-hmm.
or charity or compassion or forbearance. And so there are many levels in which we're not living out the love of Christ. And it would be good, the place to start would be for us to learn how to love those who are closest to us in our family, called evangelicals. But that's
mm-hmm.
obviously the hardest place to do it. Who wants to do that?
Oh, I know. And Mark, just in conclusion, how was your prayer life this year?
It was better than ever.
Oh, good. I love hearing that.
So I have found a discipline that I read morning prayers that actually come out of the Eastern Orthodox tradition, but they're very evangelical in terms of their this sentiment about they're very confessional in terms of their prayer.
Mm.
They spend a lot of time talking about the confession of one's sins and getting oneself in the presence of a holy God. And then I tend to read, I've been much better at reading scriptures. I try to read an Old Testament, New Testament, and a gospel lesson every morning. I'm not perfectly consistent. I don't want to give that
up. Of course.
But that's been a very good discipline that, you know, there are times in your life you do it because it's your duty, and there are times in your life you do it if you don't do it, you're going to go crazy. That's probably one reason I've done it much more better this year.
Yeah.
Much better this year because I have that real deep inner sense that if I don't do this, my mind is just crazy the whole day. And I'm not in my right mind if I don't do this. So that helps.
I concur with that sentiment completely. So I appreciate I appreciate you sharing that, Mark. It's just Christianity Today is such a great publication, and I just love the work you do, and I appreciate you coming on and doing the show.
Well, I appreciate the work you guys do and the encouragement. That's very helpful. As you can imagine, we get our fair share of criticism, so when someone says we're doing things well, we love to hear it.
Oh, indeed you are. Thank you so much, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day, everyone. See you tomorrow. What a great show. Thank you so much to Brett Hagler and the Kapsners who came in and had a lively discussion about homeschooling. And we are just so appreciative to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you have not gone to Google Play or the Apple Store and gotten the app for My Faith Radio, you should do it today because it is a great app. And thank you so much for listening. Merry Christmas. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.